Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And of course, we've got The Rock and we've got the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan here. Somebody asked me the other day to name two structures that hold water. And I was like, well, damn. Thank you very much. Bye.
There you go. It's all in the delivery. That's Stacy's new favorite joke. I got to tell you, Duff brings the jokes and the laughs for us and the delivery every Friday. Thank you, Duff. He's actually featured in the conversation today with Red Hot Chili Peppers Hall of Fame, Hollywood Star Walk of Fame recipient Chad Smith is here, returning to Talk is Jericho with some crazy stories about a recording a record with the crazy Ozzy Osbourne with Duff McKagan, the return of guitar player John Frusciante to the Peppers, how that all went down, and how it's going for the foursome, recently reunited, and reunited with producer Rick Rubin, who was on Talk is Jericho last year and gave us a little scoop on how the Peppers recording was going at the time. Chad will follow up on that. And of course, he's talking all about their new album. Unlimited Love is out today. You can get it wherever you stream or buy music. It's also available at redhotchilipeppers.com. Chad is a great guest, as you're about to hear, if you remember him from last time. It's a very interesting and funny conversation. Chad gets very hyper. We get into his first audition with the band. What happened when they told him they needed him to shave his head to join? He talks about learning from P-Funk percussionist Larry Fratangelo. And Chad grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, where I'm recording this intro right now, not far from Cream Magazine offices. He's got a great story about being a 12-year-old kid and discovering that he could ride his bike to the Cream offices and who he met at the door. So the Red Hot Chili Peppers drummer Chad Smith returns. It's a great interview coming up. But speaking of the Detroit area, Save the World Tour kicked off tonight, Diesel in Chesterfield, Michigan. It was crazy, jam-packed, great time. Thanks to everyone who came out to rock with Fozzy on the first show of the Save the World Tour. We're going all across the states. And if you're in New York City, don't forget we're playing a special gold album presentation party April 11th at Gramercy Theater in New York City. We're doing a Fozzy show and we'll be presented with our gold records for Judas and be among the first to hear Fozzy's new record Boombox when it's released May 6th. So much stuff going on. We're going all across the United States, Los Angeles, included Whiskey A Go-Go. Go to FozzyRock.com for all the ticket information, all the tour dates, and all the VIP meet and greet information. Got so much stuff going on there. We play a mini set for you, 5 songs. Some you won't hear later that night when we play for everybody else. So much stuff going on. FozzyRock.com as well. And like I said, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on April 1st, April 2nd at the Piazza in Aurora, April 3rd at the Epic Event Center in Green Bay, Ashwaubenon, Wisconsin, and April 4th at the 1175, Kansasville, Wisconsin. That's the first week of the tour. We're going everywhere. We want you to come join us, FozzyRock.com. All right, and don't forget about Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Four Leaf Clover. We are setting sail February 2nd, 2023. We've got a great lineup of talent joining us, and for the first time ever, we're going to our own private island. Come experience the vacation of a lifetime. Do not miss out. 12 of our 20 cabin levels are already sold out, and the rest are selling every day. So please go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Don't miss out, and don't miss out on the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Chad Smith bringing the funk to Talk is Jericho right here, right now.
My man!
Yes,
dude.
I can't believe it. It's good to see you, man.
How long has it been?
I think the last time we saw each other is probably backstage on the last Peppers tour, probably 2017 or so. And I was hanging out in your, and this is my favorite story, hanging out in Chad Smith's dressing room, just played a sold-out arena. And Chad has his own dressing room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, stocked full of really exciting things. Yeah. Thing of water, cigarettes, a hat. Maybe that's
literally, that's it. There was two waters. I think it was a pack of American Eagle cigarettes, and that was it.
Yeah. High maintenance, me.
You don't ask for anything else in your dressing room at all?
I just need a place to go to get away from people, you know, except the ones I want to hang out with, like you.
Right.
I don't need any, you know. You know, we have our little communal room where we all hang out, but everybody needs their little time to get away, so to speak. So, yeah, no, I don't need anything.
Does it blow your mind kind of that you guys are playing arenas and now about to do a stadium tour where you get your own dressing room considering where you were when you started?
Yeah, of course. I didn't think when I joined the Chili Peppers, Chris, in 1988, the end of 88. You know, most bands last like maybe 5 years. And so I thought we'd play some clubs and who knows? Because the band was kind of, you know, we were an underground kind of college band and doing our own weird thing. And then, you know, 1991 came around and everything changed and music changed. And all of a sudden we're playing arenas and under the bridge and give it away and all, and people are going nuts. And we're like, what the fuck? So, no, I mean, hey, when I was a kid looking at, you know, Led Zeppelin posters on my wall, that would have been the ultimate. And I never thought in a million years I'd be still doing it to this level for this long. So, you know, God bless.
It's amazing because the Peppers have become almost like multi-generational. Like I saw the Stones a couple months ago. And you go to that gig and there's obviously guys in their 70s and then there's kids, in the, you know, 7-year-old kids and teenagers and everything in between. And when I went to the Peppers, I noticed the same thing. It's become kids, older people, people your age, my age and everything else.
Yeah, I nothing better than looking down in the crowd in the first couple of rows and there's a mom and dad and then the 20-year-old and then the 15-year-old and they're all singing along. It's amazing, man. If I had that formula, if I knew what it was, we're just doing our thing, Chris, and we're so fortunate. And I think people connect to the authenticity and the realness of it and the humanity of it. Where we do it because we love it. We play from the heart, and that connects with people. So it's crazy.
You mentioned playing arenas, and we've talked about it via text, but I haven't had a chance. You're doing your first stadium tour this summer. And first of all, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yes, of course the Peppers should be playing stadiums. Cause once again, the Stones are going to be going for a few more rounds and you know, there's U2 and there's Metallica in certain points, but there's not a lot of rock bands playing stadiums. So whenever a band like the Peppers takes that jump, it's great for the whole scene, obviously great for the band. How did that come about? And were you a little bit nervous when you first heard the plan?
Yeah. You know, we've done stadiums in Europe and South America and stuff, but never in the States, never in North America. We've always done arenas. We've done some big festivals, but not our own, you know, our own big shows. So John Frusciante back in our group again. So it was partly just feeling like there's a new renewed excitement around that. And our, of course, making a new record, then, you know, the whole pandemic and lots of bands hadn't played in years. And we just felt like, let's get our balls out there and go for it. But you're always a little like, ah! You know, but we've got some good groups and artists playing with us as well. You know, we've got Beck and the Strokes, Thundercat and some other really, really good artists that are playing with us. So it'll be a good night of rock and roll. So It's you kind of have to think in a big, you got to think big, go big.
Right.
Fuck it.
So are you the type of guy that looks at numbers, like your first day sales, first week sales? You kind of like.
I try not to.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, at the same time, you kind of want to do know if it's going well. We hadn't put out a record. I don't know if you saw, we did do like a little announcement thing where we were.
It's hilarious. The newscast.
Right. We were the newscasters. And. And I was the very sensitive, kind weatherman, Randy Raindrops or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That went really well. And people really, really, you know, that I think that was helpful. It's doing well. You know, I'm knock on wood. Yeah, we've sold out to SoFi and a bunch of different places. And yeah, we're just right now, we're just gearing up for that. The record comes out April 1st. And then we've been rehearsing and getting ready to play. And we'll be in Spain in the beginning of June and then over here in July.
The Peppers have always had a great sense of humor. I love that preview video that you did as the newscasters. Did John Frusciante, did you tell him what's going on, or does he just show up and you just act around him? Because he was just kind of sitting there with no idea when the tour was, and it fits his personality completely.
Yeah, no, that was it. He's like, I don't do comedy. He's like, I'm just going to be the straight man. We're like, great, you just be you, and we'll just be us, and it worked out perfect. Yeah, that, it was great. We had a good time with that, Now he's dedicated and into it, playing great. And Chris, he just wanted to play guitar in a rock band again. And he's like, and the Chili Peppers is the only band I want to be in. My question, to him was just like, well, there's a lot of other stuff that goes along with just writing songs and recording and all the touring and all the things, about being in a band.
Sure.
And I just want to make sure he was down for that. And he is. He's ready. He's ready to go. And so it's pretty exciting. I think we have some unfinished business with playing with him and creating music with him. And we did a lot of songs like we always do. And, we had unfortunately what was happening in the world, but we could just hunker down and write for months, like 8 or 9 months. We just wrote, the four of us in a room. And then we went with Rick and, got the old band back together, and that was it, and made a bunch of songs, and now they're coming out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's take a step back. Was it hard? Because I know we had a bass player in Fozzy that left the band, and then we brought him back for a second time, and then he left again. And the thought of bringing him back a third time seems completely unfathomable. Obviously not as legendary as the chemistry between the four of you with John Frusciante. Is that something that you and Flea and Anthony discuss? Like, okay, if we bring this guy back for a third time, are we going to get fucked again? Or, you know what I mean? Like, is it hard to kind of get that trust back? Or do you know him so well that you knew he was in for the long haul?
We do know that. I mean, I was surprised when Anthony came to me and he was like, hey, what do you think about getting John back in the band? And I was like, and it'd been 10 years.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that ship had sailed, so to speak. And so I was surprised. But at the same time, like you said, we do have this special chemistry, the four of us. As you get a bit older, you kind of realize that. You don't take that kind of stuff for granted. And I love Josh. Josh Klinghoffer is an amazing musician, and he's my friend, and I love him. And, we made some great music with Josh, but there is a special thing that the four of us with John have. And I think we wanted to, look, he's amazing, bit of a wild card, but I think that after talking to him and he was more self-aware, and he was just really, we talked about everything, why he left and what's different and this and the other things. And he seemed in a really good place, and he wanted to make music, and we were kind of feeling a little stagnant creatively. So it just all worked out. But it'll be great for people that have never seen us with John, and then people that have older people to have him come back in our group. And it's pretty exciting for us. And I mean, he's a special guy. It's just that he's one of the greatest musicians, and certainly one of the best guys that I've ever been lucky to create with.
He's, in my opinion, is a musical genius, and it's the fine line. You're laughing.
Yes, you are.
The fine line between insanity and genius. There's a lot of quirkiness that comes with certain guys.
Sure.
And you have to just accept it and go along with it. And it's just part of the overall package, right?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. You know, it's amazing. I mean, he's just so knows so much about music and a lot of things, but he's so focused. He's a very focused individual at when whatever he's doing at that point in his life, and for the good and maybe for the bad, but certainly right now he's just all in. It's exciting. So you have to bring, you know, that lifts up everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is also great. And at this point in our career, it's fun to have that renewed energy, and it's just fun making music, and that's the way it should be. You know, it should be just fun.
Absolutely. And the Peppers too are essentially, you know, obviously Anthony's the front man, but it's a very tight knit trio of the three of you guys. When you start jamming with Flea and with John Frusciante again, I don't know, do you have to change your playing than when you're playing with Josh, with Flea as a rhythm section? Is it more energy? Like you mentioned, more energy. Is it more frenetic? Is it a different stylistic way? Like, how do you adjust between two different guitar players, or Dave Navarro, or all these different guys that you've had whenever you bring somebody new in?
You know, obviously Flea and I have been playing together for 30 whatever years. So we have a thing that was kind of this unspoken musical telepathy, which only comes from playing with people for a long time. But, you know, I'd say with John, I mean, you always adjust, you know, you got to be a good listener, and you always adjust it to different musical situations, different players, people play differently. But there is a familiarity. I was talking to John the other day, and he was like, you know, Chad, you're really the only drummer. I mean, he's played with other people, but he's like in a band. He goes, my playing is you're drumming, and obviously Flea's bass playing, but he speaking to me, it's like, you're drumming, that's what I play off of. I'm so used to that. You know what I mean? It's
right.
That's part of the feel and part of the what works and why it works. And so it's, you know, it took a little bit, you know, you kind of re-dance partner and you get and the shoe has a shoe, you get right back in the old leather shoe. And it was fun, you know, but when we first came back, he's like, I haven't really been playing guitar very much. He was doing a lot of electronic music and other stuff. It took a little bit, but I mean, he's not long. He's just like, he's amazing. And so, but as a band, it sounds like Chili Peppers.
Yeah. You
know, I don't know what else to say. It's kind of it. And so it's different, and we're playing different music. We're writing different songs with different people, all that stuff. But for some reason, like you say, the three instruments, and the voice is an instrument, of course, but the three, you know, two melodics and a rhythm one, they make a unique racket, you know, and it's pretty fucking cool.
And of course, the other missing piece of the, you know, the classic Peppers stew is Rick Rubin. You mentioned he was on Talk Is Jericho a few months ago and mentioned that he was doing the Peppers again.
I know. I heard, and you were like, what?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was a scoop. I got a scoop.
I know. Because he wasn't supposed to talk about anything. I got in trouble for like doing something. And they're like, you're not supposed to say anything about, well, one of those, you know, oh, sorry, shit. Yeah. And I heard Rick was, you were talking to him, and he said, which I found interesting, I just did his podcast not too long ago, and he brought this up, and he said when he came and listened to us rehearse for the first time, we played him our songs. We hadn't played them for anybody else. And Rick came down, and he was so emotional. He was like, just to see us together playing. And he wasn't like critiquing the songs or what about this chorus or that. He was just like walking around the room just like with this big grin on his face. And he said when he left, he was crying. Yeah, it was amazing. I was like, wow. Yeah, he was really moved, you know. So, I mean, Rick is obviously, everybody knows his history and what an amazing producer he is. And he's been with us from Blood Sugar on. That's 30 whatever years. And we've made all of our records except for one with him. So it felt natural to go back and, you know, have Rick on board. And he's just a smart musical guy. He's such a music fan. Mm-hmm. He just knows what he likes. And he's very direct about it, but in a kind way. And he just knows. He knows us, and we know him. So that helps. And we trust each other. We don't always agree. But most of his ideas are pretty good. You know, he's been doing it a while. He kind of knows what he's doing. And he knows how to find the essence of that piece of music that you're playing and bring the really interesting or unique thing of that song or that music and make that shine. And often sometimes we won't see that through the forest, through the trees kind of thing. Hey, wait till you hear this. And we just think it's the greatest thing. He'll be like, that's good. you did that on Californication, but it's really good. And then we'll play him some jam from Tuesday and he'll be like, that, make that a song. That's awesome. We're like, what? You know, so sometimes you need that objective thing because we're so caught up in you know, the music and coming up with ideas and parts and stuff. Sometimes you need that person that has no emotional connection to it. And yeah, and he's really good like that. And he was into it, man. He was just like, everybody was elevating their game and it was really fun. It came real quick, which is also good when we recording process. That's good for us. Just tweaking, but getting good performances. We all play live. We're on the floor. No clicks. We just play like a band. Yeah, that's it. We just try to get good performances. And Rick is really good with that as well, knowing when it's still getting better. And then when it goes this way, he's like, okay, let's take a break or let's do a different song. And he's really good like that.
Seems like when you're writing, from talking to him, he's kind of more of an observer.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, he kind of just hears and listens and picks out little pieces rather than being the knob twiddler, as we discussed.
Yeah. No, he's not a musician. He doesn't play. I mean, he played guitar in a band a long time ago in New York. I forget the name of the band, but that didn't last too long. I enjoy seeing him in those old Beastie Boy videos.
Right.
When he's got short beard. And he's just so like.
Little college kid. Yeah.
Not the Rick that you know now. It's so funny. Youth. But he's such a music fan. He just sits back and sometimes that throws people off, you know, because a lot of producers are in there and, you know, hey, and they're out there fucking cheerleading or this part or that. They really put their stamp on it. And Rick just kind of, he just wants to capture you. He doesn't want to flavor it or influence it too much. And certainly in a sound or the sound of us playing with Rick Rubin producing is the sound of four guys in a room.
Yeah.
There's some overdubs and background vocals and stuff, but the core of it. And he's like, because you guys are one of the only bands that can still fucking all play and play well. Because Pro Tools, you can chop everything up. And then it sounds like, hey, it's great for a different kind of music, but rock and roll, the way we do it, just get out there and it's a performance. It's supposed to move around and build and the dynamics. And he goes, you guys know how to do that. Do it. Nobody does that anymore. Blah, blah, blah. So that's another thing. And he knows how to get out of the way and he knows when to jump in and say, oh, this is an offer with me. He'll push the button. Hey, did you always do that, Phil? I'm like, what about just boom? What would Phil Rudd do? He goes, that's the live version. Save that for the live version. Fuck! I'm trying to get my little chops in. But he's like, whatever serves the song, what's best for the song, and, you know, and he's right. And so my job is to just make it feel good, play with dynamics. If I get lucky, I can come up with a beat or a hook, a drum thing that helps the song. And I'm not too concerned these days with, like, the ultimate snare sound or this or that, or it's more just what serves the song and sonically and part wise and musically. And so I'm just trying to in there and make it feel good. Cause you know, people talk about Ringo Starr. Oh, technically he's not this, he's not that, which is bullshit anyway. But like,
right.
Every Beatles song feels great.
Yes.
That's what you, as a drummer in a rock band, that's what you want. You want it to feel great. So, whether it's live or in the studio, but especially in the studio, that's the most important thing. So like that's at the top, you know, the other shit's fine, but make it groove.
It's amazing, man. As we get older, it always comes back to Phil Rudd, always comes back to Ringo, the masters of playing for the song, right?
It's simple, but swinging their balls off.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's music that should be, you know, real straight and mechanical, but with what we do and those bands. I mean, Phil is a perfect example. It's like so straight, but in between those notes, there's that undeniable swing that he has.
Yes.
That with other drummers in AC/DC, they're great drummers. Not the same, though. He has a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the perfect example is John Bonham, you know, although technically amazing. But when he's just grooving straight like a cashmere or something, the swing underneath it, the way the placement of the notes is everything. And that's, and Ringo, the king of that shit. It's amazing. And so, yeah, as you get older, you kind of understand, and maybe that's just thing that comes with time and experience. And that's what makes a good song, for at least for a drummer. That's the thing. Just make it feel good.
Do you remember when you were a kid? I mean, obviously, you mentioned Bonham. I don't know if you ever saw him live. As a young drummer, did you go to gigs and see a few guys where the light shone on you and the Blues Brothers, happens where you're like, oh, my gosh? Or does it happen nowadays? Is there anybody that you see that you just go, God, man, this guy's got it?
Yeah. You know, I saw Led Zeppelin in 1977 at the Pontiac Silverdome.
Wow.
Just a shithole. I think it's been torn down. It was in December. And I had nosebleed fucking seats. This is a 76,000 seat place. I think that's where Hulk Hogan.
WrestleMania 3.
Took it from Andre the Giant. He didn't know Andre the Giant was going to give it up, did he?
Yeah, that's what he says. For the last minute,
supposedly. But that place, it's fucking, you know, enormo dumb. And I was so high, and I was so far back, and Zeppelin was late, and it sounded like shit. I was just there, but I just wanted, you know, obviously Led Zeppelin was you know, my favorite band, certainly at that time. But I did have a Kiss moment with seeing Kiss as my second concert at Cobble Hall, again, a smaller venue in Detroit, where they recorded one of the Kiss Alive records. And on the back of the album...
Oh.
The first Kiss Alive album, there's a picture of those two dudes holding it,
holding
up the post. You're looking very mullet Midwest, like such a snapshot of 75. I was at that. That was my second concert ever, Chris.
At that gig?
Yes. I loved Kiss. I bought into the fire and the blood and the whole thing. I loved all that stuff. I was at the 12th row. And those dudes were like five or six rows behind me. So before the show, I'm watching Finn Costello, the photographer, walk down, take a picture of the guys. And, you know, it's sold out Cobo Hall. And I'm at that concert and I'm 13 years old and mind blowing. Changed my life. Couldn't fucking believe that. I mean, I loved Kiss so much. And I'm like, oh, my God. They're right there. I'm breathing the same air. You know, it was really Peter Chris. Say what you want about him, what you want about Kiss's music, but Peter Chris had a swing. That was like, I knew I wanted to do it before then, but I was like, I want to do it like that. I want to do that right there. I want my riser to go up fucking 20 feet the fucking air. Come on!
Yes, who doesn't want that? I still think the drum solo on Kiss Alive is the best recorded drum solo as far as live albums go. It's very musical.
Yeah, it holds up. It holds up. I did speak to Eddie Kramer one time, and you know the infamous producer Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, and he mixed that album. But there's a lot of stuff on there that's not so live.
Sure. Paul even says that. There's a lot of studio re-recording, etc.
Yeah. So it's like, it really burst my bubble when he told me. I'm like, what? And he goes, well, you know, they were not my band. They couldn't fucking even, you know, jumping around and, you know, even their instruments were bad. I was like, oh, you got a point there. Okay. All right. Don't look behind the curtain. The Great Oz is there fixing everything up. But still fucking going. Unbelievable. How many farewell tours can you do?
Exactly. I think this one is the one, though.
Yeah?
This is the farewell of farewells. Well, I think
Why? Not because somebody said that.
In talking with Paul and Gene as well, I think it's hard to wear all that equipment. all the clothes and the because they still got the platform heels.
Unbelievable.
You know, 73 years old, wearing that extra gear. I think that's the issue, I think. It's not like, you know, Peppers, you just wear a sock on your cock and you're fine for the gig.
Yeah, run around. That doesn't weigh much. Yeah. I mean, Paul's still, he's in good shape. He runs around and shit.
Yeah.
Gene, maybe not so much. He just stands there and sticks his tongue
out. He's the demon. He shouldn't be running around.
He's
right?
The demon. He's not running around. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see.
But speaking of legendary guys and speaking of you know, drummers that have, I mean, you have now become, you know, one of the premier, in my opinion, the best rock drummer in the world today.
Oh, you're so smart and handsome and powerful and a genius of rock and roll.
Yes. And you told me the last time you were on the show or in private or whatever that you were kind of Rick Rubin's bullpen drummer. And when he did the Sabbath record, you didn't get the call. He gave Brad Wilk the call.
I know. Fuck.
But the consolation prize.
Yeah. Door number three.
Yeah. Is playing on Ozzy's last record, Ordinary Man, with the amazing rhythm section of Chad Smith and Duff McKagan. On bass.
Yeah, not bad.
We've never even talked about this via other than some text. How the fuck did that happen? And how did you record it? And kind of tell us that story, because that's amazing. It's a great record, too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Andrew Watt is a producer and a songwriter and an amazing musician. And he, a friend of mine, young guy, I think he's 31 now, but he got into the pop world. He's like a rock guy who started out that way. I think he was in Justin Bieber's band or somebody and wrote songs with Bieber and kind of got into the pop world and started writing songs and playing and producing these guys and had huge hits for guys like that. And
he was also in a band with Glenn Hughes and Bonham, the California Breed.
He was. That's where we met, at the Whiskey A Go Go.
There you go.
Perfect. And I knew Jason and Glenn.
Where Lizzie Borden played.
And where you played. I saw you there.
That's right. Hey. You did see us there. That's hey, there you go. It all ties into the whiskey.
There you go. All about the whiskey. So, yeah, so he's a rock guy. But, you know, he just kind of fell into this pop world. And so that's a small world. And he started producing these other artists. And so fast forward, he was working with Post Malone on Post's record. And they were at, like, you know, the Rainbow or something. And Andrew's like, Posty, you're like the modern day Ozzy. You're just like, you know, beer drinking, this, that, you know, you're lovable. And he's like, I fucking love Ozzy Osbourne. And, you know, Post is also a rocker. Mm-hmm. Andrew's like, boom, let's get Ozzy on one of your songs. And I'll write a song and I'll get Chad to play on it. And da 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 da. That's what happened. It's on Post's record, Hollywood Bleeding or something like that it's called. And Ozzy comes down to, and Andrew has a studio in Beverly Hills in his basement. Ozzy comes and he didn't even know who Post Malone was. The fucking postman. What? But Kelly knew, obviously, and Andrew's friends with her. But he had fallen. This is like 3 years now. He had fallen and hurt his neck really bad. And had surgery and was not bouncing back like the Ozzy, you know, the bulletproof Ozzy. And so he does the feature on the Post song, and then he leaves and had a great time. And he's telling fucking stories. He's just Ozzy. He's peeing in the bushes. It's like fucking like does not disappoint. We're all just like Uncle Ozzy. I mean, it was amazing. I had met him, but a long time ago. So he leaves and Kelly's like really emotional. And like, she's like, oh, I haven't seen my dad that happy in 6 months. He's been moping around the house, this and that and the other thing. And we're like, of course, because he's around like the dudes and he's singing and doing music and telling and farting and telling fucking, he's like, this is what he loves that. We all do. She's like, oh my God, it'd be so amazing. He needs to make music again. Light bulb. Watt's like, let's do an Ozzy album. I'm like, great. He was in. And we had Duff, you know, who's our friend. And we called Duff. And you want to come down and we'll just make some songs. And literally, Chris, because he has the studio where the gear is like all set up, all the mics, ready to go at any time. He came over, Duff came over for 4 days, 4 afternoons, literally like from 1 to 6. And it was literally, who's got a rip?
Wow.
And Watt would have one, Duff would have one, and I would sit there and I would listen and we'd make arrangement, stuff, and go record it like right away. And we did 9 songs in those 4 days, 9 basic tracks, written wow. and recorded. Boom. And it'll be like, well, we love it when, you know, like in fucking War Pigs where there's a stop and then it's just Ozzy. Let's do like we yeah. just wanted to do all of our favorite Sabbath Ozzy right. moments. And we would reference that shit. And so there's Straight to Hell. And then Under the Graveyard got this and da 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 da. And Ozzy likes to sing about aliens and he loves the Beatles. Blah, blah, blah. And so we just kind of did that. It happened really quick. I mean, again, like as a kid, Ozzy Osbourne has one of the most unique voices, instruments in rock and roll. Like,
right.
He opens his mouth, you know it's Ozzy Osbourne. But it doesn't matter if he's singing the fucking phone book. Yeah. It doesn't matter. And he still has that. And it's amazing. And so we just wanted to honor that. And shit, we thought, this is probably the last album Ozzy, you know, is ever going to make. Who knows? Yeah. So that comes out, does great, couldn't tour, and pandemic and all that shit. So we made another one.
So there's another one that you did.
And it's getting mastered tomorrow.
Wow. That's another scoop.
That's another scoop for you. Oh, shit, I'm in trouble again. So we did another one. We got Robert Trujillo playing wow. on some songs. Ben and Ozzy's band. Duff's on a couple again. Andrew, me and Andrew are doing it. But check this out. So we've got the English royalty of guitar players. So Tony Iommi and Ozzy have never collaborated outside of Black Sabbath. Tony sent us a bunch of riffs, and we took what we thought was the best one, which is fucking great. So I didn't get the Brad got the gig, but this is the closest to Black Sabbath I'm ever gonna get. So Andy's on the bass doing like the fucking great. The bass on the song is amazing, and Tony sent us the riffs. You know, files. He's in England. And we played to it. It's fucking got everything. It's got all, you know, all the stuff that you would want. Ozzy loves it. And so he's on that track.
Jeez.
Then Eric Clapton plays a fucking wah-wah cream type solo. We're like, Eric, can you solo on this song? Wah-wah, please. Eric, what do you think about this? With the wah-wah, everything. Because yeah. that's his fucking thing, you know. He's and so he's soloing all over this other track. Then Jeff Beck is on Jeez. 2 songs.
Wow.
Now we try to get Jimmy Page. We try to get the Holy Trinity. I don't think Page plays anymore too much, unfortunately.
Right.
But Mike McCready's on a track. Josh Homme, my neighbor from Queens, solos on a track. Of course, and then Zakk Wylde is on the record as well, all over it. So it's like, if you're a guitar player, pretty fucking good.
When you mentioned that you were playing live, were you playing in the studio with Duff together as a rhythm section?
Yeah.
So how was that playing with him? Because obviously you've had some great bass players with Flea and Michael Anthony and now Duff McKagan. I mean, this is another amazing musician for you to jam with.
Incredible. Duff is so musical. And he, you know, he plays guitar. Like he would come up and he would be on acoustic guitar and have these riffs. And he's a great musician. And he's got such a sound that like his growly fucking like night, you know, like he does that shit and he does it good. And it's him, which is so great. Yeah, he's a great musician. He's got great time and musical. And both those guys are always like, I'm used to, again, trying to just play what's right for the song, not too much, a little fill going into the chorus, maybe in the outro I'll do a little bit. They're like, you're Chad fucking Smith. Go for it. Fucking go for it. Like, they're like, come on. Ah! And I'm like, all right. They're like, no one does that anymore. They're like, Andrew's like, you, Chad, you're like the matador. It's like.
The bull.
Yeah, I'm the bull. And the matadors are like, and he's like, I don't fucking sit down at the drums. Wait. Because I know in the first and second take, that's the shit that we're going to want. You're going to start thinking about it. Often not good, especially for me. You start thinking too much. And he's like, I just know the arrangement and then fucking go for it. So there's a lot of, I hope, appropriate overplaying on the record. We'll see.
Did you mention that you said you couldn't tour on it because of the pandemic? Was there ever a thought of doing some shows?
You know, there was talk about it.
Jeez.
Obviously, I know. Oh, man. I would have been fucking amazing. At least a couple, like an LA one and a New York or something. I don't know about a tour, but I hope that Ozzy gets very prideful. He wants to be up
there. Of course.
Doing his fucking thing. I get it 100%. You know, I hope someday to play any of those songs.
Just to see you play Crazy Train and Over the Mountain and some of those classic tunes, man.
So fucking great. Yeah, he's the best, man.
It's great because during pandemic lockdown, you know, I'm watching a lot of different documentaries and watching a lot of different shows, and I'm watching Count Me In, the drummer documentary, and there's my friend Chad.
There he is.
And there he is. And then I watched the Cream documentary, and there's my friend Chad. And it's like, there he is again.
There he is.
I love.
Can't get rid of that fucking guy.
I love the Cream story that you had, which I would love for you to tell. Now, obviously.
Well, you mean the Ginger Baker one, right? The Beware of Mr. Baker?
The one with Alice Cooper and the Cream magazine.
Oh, Cream, right, of course. Sorry. I mean Cream of the band.
Yeah, not Cream the band. Yeah, Cream, the famous rock and roll magazine from the 70s.
Yeah,
great
yeah,
documentary that came out.
It was.
They sent me a coffee cup with the Boy Howdy Cream guy on it, and it was just amazing.
Yeah.
But your story is just a beautiful story that I watched it 3 or 4 times.
Well, I grew up outside of Detroit. Of course, that's where, unbeknownst to a young 12-year-old Chad, Cream magazine, which was a rock and roll magazine. I mean, there was Circus and Hit Parader, maybe another one, but Cream was the kind of Bible for a kid, but it was irreverent. And they made fun of the rock stars, and the writers were incredible. It was funny and
right.
They, you know, would show candid pictures, and it was great. I loved it. And I read it every month. And so in the Detroit version that you got, there was a yellow local section, maybe in the middle or somewhere, and it would talk about all the local bands that were playing, whatever local shit was going on. I thought that was kind of weird. Not weird, but I didn't really understand why, you know, somebody must, you know,
right.
Somebody must have stapled this in there or something. Free magazine.
Yeah.
It's like, So I look in the front, in the table of contents, and I look at the bottom in the fine print, and it says, you know, if you have any comments or this or that, send it to, you know, here's the address, Birmingham, Michigan, what is literally the next town over from where I live. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. There is no way. I get on my fucking 10-speed, my Schwinn, little 12-year-old Chad. I knew the street because it was right next to Discount Records where I used to steal my first record. I was a 12-year-old. Try to crotch a Masters of Reality album.
Shove it down your pants,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, what is that? I got caught. So I'm on my orange 10-speed, and I get to the street. I think it was Maple. Can't remember exactly now. And I'm looking at the addresses, and, you know, 3467, 3465, 34, and I stop. And it's this indescript-looking building. Literally, as I stop and clock the address, the door flies open, and out comes Alice Cooper with a fucking Budweiser, no shirt on, stumbling out in the afternoon. I'm like, holy shit! It's real! Oh, my God! I was just like... The whole time it was here. Unbelievable. Again, that was another thing. It was like, man, like if Cream Mega, I remember at 12, like everything is magical and
right.
Unattainable and mysterious and, you know, scary and dangerous and, you know, rock and roll in the 70s. And I was like, it's right here? Fuck, if Cream can do this shit, maybe... Little old Chad could get fucking lucky too. Once I got over the fact of like, oh my God. And then like a couple weeks later, I would like just kind of hang out. I would go to that store. And remember the day, Chris, you're probably not old enough. You would just go into the record store. I didn't have any money. And you would just look through the album.
Just look.
Just yeah. look. And look at the covers. Oh, this looks cool. That guy looks like fucking insane. Oh, look at the tits on that one. Yeah, that's why I didn't have a penny in my pocket. But I would look at those records and like, wow, this is so cool and so great. So I would do that, and then I would kind of, you know, hang around and see who might stumble out of Cream Magazine. I never saw anyone again. But that first time was mind-blowing for sure.
Well, it's amazing, though, because that's how influential rock magazines were at that time. Like you mentioned Circus. I had a subscription to Circus, and that was your lifeline to what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, the new Metallica record's called Justice for All. I saw it in Circus. And, you know, the new Iron Maiden Somewhere in Time's coming out, you know, March 25th.
Right.
And you would wait until March 25th, and I used to take the bus down to the local – is the new Iron Maiden out yet? No, not this week. Fuck. Take the bus home next week. Take it back. Is it out yet? No.
Right? And that, yeah, I mean, obviously everything's like now like this, but there was something about that that made you like even love it more. You had so much invested in that. I was so invested in those Kiss albums and, you know, when Dress to Kill is coming out. Like you say, if you heard a little tidbit somewhere, and that was the only way that you heard it.
Yeah.
They weren't on TV. They weren't saying this or that. Like, it was, that was really your only way, was something in print. And even then it was like, you know, is this real? I don't know. Maybe they're just saying that. And I remember Led Zeppelin albums. Oh, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. No, it's not.
Yeah.
A year later, Physical Graffiti. Oh no, we're done recording. It's coming out. But it made it so, I don't know. It's just, to me, I maybe I'm just a sentimental old fart, but I just love that, like, anticipation. It just made it so much more special when, like, something. And when someone, and when a band came to town. Hey, remember Led Zeppelin back then? Again, I was really young. You didn't see them on TV. They weren't even on, like, Don Kirshner's rock concert. They didn't do any of that. They didn't do festivals. They weren't at Woodstock. They were their own thing. And it was like, like this society, you know, and if you could, and they would put their tickets out and they would sell out like that. And so that was it. You never heard, there wasn't ads for them, or it was like they were this really mysterious thing, which is amazing to me. And it was,
I find that they gave you more of a connection to the band. You're talking about the Peppers, I remember watching Real Men Don't Kill Coyotes on the, like, gosh, that's back Hillel Slovak years,
yeah.
But some small little video station, local UHF. Hey, this is the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's
fuck?
Weird.
Yeah.
And then Mother's Milk came out, and I remember seeing you with the hair.
Yeah.
No one else really had hair. Anthony had long hair, but you, like, it was like, what is with these guys? You got to figure it out for yourself, because there's really nowhere to read about it or hear about it.
Right.
You know, and I love that discovery, I guess you'd say, about bands back then.
Yeah. Especially if it was a band that you didn't really know about, you were like, whoa, what is this? And then you would go, somebody would turn it on to an older brother or your friend or something, then you would get into it. And then it was like, well, this is something I, you know, not everybody knows about. This isn't some big giant thing that everybody else loves. This is my thing. Like some of those bands you're talking about, like the Maidens and some of those bands that, like,
yeah,
that new wave of British metal came over, and it was like, I would watch MTV when MTV first came out. So what is that, 81?
81, yeah, 81 or so, yeah.
And they would play any video, and they would play.
Yeah, they didn't have enough videos to play. They just put anything on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they would play Rothschild. It was in, like, you know, was
in rotation.
Heavy rotation. I was like, what the fuck is this? This is fucking great. Come here to get you, Clyde Burr. I was like, right?
Right, totally.
And then it was like, wow, this is. And I would ask my old buddies, and like, do you ever heard Iron Maiden? Oh, I never heard of them. I'd be like, you're not it. You don't fucking know. That's the shit. That's the new shit.
You mentioned being such a rock guy. Obviously, we know the story about you auditioning for the Peppers and joining the Peppers. You've got a great personality. Those guys have great personalities. When did you realize, like, okay, this is different from a normal rock and roll band, and we're going to be wearing some light bulbs on our heads here type shit? Like, was that kind of a collective effort, or was just everyone just going for it? We don't give a shit. Like, very unique, especially for the time.
You know, coming in, talking about that first audition, like before that, like, I knew of the Chili Peppers. I knew who they were, and I'd heard of it, heard them. Oh, the guys with socks on their dicks, this and that and the other thing. But I wasn't like a fan. I didn't have their records. I had to literally go out and buy the Abbey Road EP cassette to listen in my car on the way to the audition. I sat in the parking lot before I went in and listened to it. Okay, they do Fire by Jimmy Hendrix. Okay, that's cool. Fight like a Brave. Okay, Funky Crime, Straight Fall. Okay, this sounds pretty good. But going in and, you know, setting up in there, and again, like, I, you know, from Detroit, have my long hair, bandana, cut off shirt. They're like, get this fucking guy out of here. They're not about like any Sunset Strip rock, you know, go try out for the fucking The Cult or somebody, you know.
Exactly.
You're in the wrong room, pal. Someone had said that I eat drums for breakfast, was what Flea was told. So I'm walking in with my drums, and I'm 6'3" and they're not.
Yeah.
And he's got his little green mohawk and the tattoos, and, you know, it was just, that aesthetic was somewhat, I think, important. I did not have that going on. And they're like, he goes, oh yeah, is that your breakfast? And I was like, and I'm like looking at,
you're like, what?
Yeah. What? I'm looking at this fucking guy. And Anthony and John was 18 and he had a big long black mohawk, and he had a Steve Vai fucking Ibanez guitar
with the handle.
Yeah, with the handle. Yeah. He loves Steve Vai because he loves Zappa. But now he's in his favorite band. He's in Chili Peppers. He's a kid. Not your normal, you know, guys. But I'm like, yeah, hey, they have a record deal. Fuck, I'll try out for these guys. Are you kidding me? I was doing nothing. But as soon as we started playing, Chris, it was like, this is not a joke. This isn't a fucking joke band, or this isn't some, not, you know, kooky look at me and I got funny hair. These guys can fucking play.
Right.
You know, we just started jamming immediately, just set up, and Flea started playing, and everything back then was super fast and, you know, that thing. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
So I'm just like in, and I was like, this is fucking good. I don't know what it is, but I'm digging it. The energy. And Anthony's like running around laughing his ass off. I'm like, that's kind of weird. Like, we were just jamming, so he wasn't singing. And John broke a string, and I've never seen anyone change a string faster in my life. And he just didn't want to miss out on the jam. He just fucking
changed on the fly.
He just changed so fast. I was like, I knew that. I mean, I'd never played with a bass player like Flea, obviously, you know. But again, I remember this is 1988. This is a long time ago. And we just connected. We had a thing. And then we're jamming. And then I'm like, I started doing double time. And they were like, whoa, you know, oh, shit, this guy's fucking leading. Okay, let's do that. I'll fucking, oh, yeah? It was one of like, oh, yeah? So the hair and the bandana, that kind of fell away because they were like, this guy's pretty good. And the producer who had produced the Uplift Mofo Party play on the record before Mother's Milk was just kind of hanging in the back, Michael Beinhorn.
Mm. Oh, wow, yeah.
I'm like, okay, you know, and they're like, yeah, cool, we'll give you a call. Right when I walked out, I was like, oh, that was pretty fun. Beinhorn goes, and they tried out other guys, and Michael said, that's your guy. Anthony's like, the hair and the thing and the Detroit. And they're like, I'm telling you, that you got.
Wow.
And so Michael, I owe him, you know, Flea was in. I think Anthony was the one that was like, I don't know, you know, I'm not really, he's a good rock drummer and everything, and he hits hard. I don't know if he really gets the subtleties of some of our stuff. And I remember he made me a cassette early on. Oh, after he said, so I got a call, this is how long ago this was, on my friend's answering machine, who I was sleeping on his couch. And it said, oh, it's Anthony and Flea. Yeah, it's cool. We want you to join the band, but you have to shave your head. Come into rehearsal on Tuesday. And I was like, I'm not shaving my head. These beautiful Midwestern locks I've been working on. Fuck that. So I show up, you know, of course, there's the hair. I'm like, yeah, you didn't shave your head. I'm like, yeah, fuck you guys. I'm not shaving my head. They're like, okay, we respect that.
Yeah. Which is great. Showed you had some balls too, right?
Right.
So you said he made you a cassette of what?
Oh yeah, he made me a cassette of like the Meters and like God, like the Neville Brothers and some P-Funk stuff.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, and the deeper James Brown cuts, deep Sly Stone stuff, like more funk that I knew of, but he's like, this is an important part of what we do. Yeah, I want you to really, you know, do your homework. And I was like, cool. And it was great, you know, like some Tower of Power and some other like super more slinky funk stuff. And he was right.
Because if you're going from a rock standpoint, you mentioned Ginger Baker and Bill Ward, they have a real kind of frenetic kind of jazzier style that I'm sure helped with the Peppers.
Yep.
But the funk is the one element that's really not in rock and roll. Was there a certain or a couple funk drummers that stood out for you that you learned from?
I mean, early on, you know, in the early 80s, I had the real honor and pleasure. And it's funny, Chris, this is how I first heard of the Chili Peppers. I was in a band called Pharaoh, which was a terrible band. But all the players were these really good players. I was the young, not so good player, but trying my best to keep up. And the percussionist in that band was his name is Larry Fratangelo, and he was the percussionist for P-Funk.
Oh, okay.
And he had played on Freaky Styley because George produced it in Detroit. So in like 85 or 86, I think that record was in 85, it was after Larry and I had played together. He was like, hey, what have you been doing lately? Oh, I played well on this for these crazy kids from California, George is doing, and he played me some of the, like a couple songs. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I didn't think anything of it, but that was the first time they came on my radar. But Larry really helped me with, you know, I was kind of wild and the best way I could put it, like I was a drummer before, and I worked with him for a year in this band. And when I got done after playing with Larry and he took me under his wing, then I was like a musician because I learned about time and dynamics, right, how to build a song and where not to play and what's just musical stuff. Where before I would just put my head down and bash my way through and hope to and stop it altogether kind of thing, you know. And he was like, he really taught me a lot. I mean, he played with Dennis Chambers, like great drummers, and you know, P-Funk. And so I owe a lot to Larry because it was a time in my life where I really needed that schooling, so to speak. And he was patient with me. And he's like, he played percussion. He had a big, giant setup. He's like, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. You just keep straight time. No matter what I do, do not move. Bob, and he'd be playing all around and trying to speed up and fuck with me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, don't fucking move. You know, when it comes to funk, it's all about the one. So I listened to, you know, James Brown records, and I mean, those are the Bible as far as, you know, that goes. And then, you know, older stuff, like a lot of the Stax stuff and, you know, When a Man Loves a Woman or just like
just all the, yeah,
that kind of that, you know, muscle soul stuff. And see, it's just the backbeat. Al Green, just the backbeat. That's it. That's all you need. That's it. But it's where you put it, you know, and that kind of stuff. And it took me a while. I was like, I can't really tell.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just playing straight. I don't know. Listen, you have to really fucking like. And yeah, and again, you have to be at a certain point in your life where you can.
Where you understand it.
Understand it. Correct. Yeah.
Last couple of questions for you, Chad. I mean, the record Unlimited Love, when Black Summer came out, I was like, it reminded me of By the Way came out, the song. We were just like, yes, the Peppers are back. This is great. And then Poster Child comes out and it's completely different, which is what I love about the Peppers. There is no rules for you guys.
No.
I think that's, you're one of the few bands. I mean, you throw out Beatles or Zeppelin, you could do whatever you want and people just accept it. Is the whole record like this of just different styles all, you know?
Is it all over the place? Well, we got a lot of songs, which we normally do. I mean, Black Summer, you know, is it's a like a familiar sound, you know what I mean?
Traditional Peppers, yeah.
Yeah, and it's John's thing, and that's cool, and I love it. And then Poster Child's like funk, and I don't know. If we're going to do that live, Anthony's going to need a fucking teleprompter.
I know. And he's needed oxygen. There's no breath in that song.
I know. And we're doing it live, and he's like, he gets to like the last verse, and I see him like, that's a tough one. Didn't think about that when you were fucking writing 900 fucking words.
That's
and
right.
Verse number five. Yeah, it's, you know, Chris, we're lucky, man. We can kind of do anything, like you say, and it still sounds like us. So there's, I mean, there's a little bit of everything. The next song comes out April 1st called These Are the Ways. We just shot a video for. And that sounds like The Who. I mean, I'm doing a bunch of fucking drumming on that one. So, you know, it's, but we love all, you know.
Yeah.
We love everything, you know. So when we do it, you know, Anthony's voice, is, you know, it sounds, that's him. You know, so it's like he can tie it together. But musically, yeah, we can, it's so rewarding to have that, to be able to play whatever you want and just ends up sounding like Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know.
You mentioned that you're kind of in rehearsals now. How many songs do you guys kind of have at the ready? Because I know the set list changes nightly.
Yeah. We're learning a lot of new ones just so we have them. And we haven't really played them, you know, live, other than when we're in the studio. It's been a long time. So everyone's figuring out their pedals and their background vocals and all that shit. Yeah, usually we start out kind of doing a certain amount of new ones. And then you figure out which ones resonate or which ones go over or which ones you play well, better, or whatever. It probably happens with your band sometimes.
Yeah.
You think like, I can't wait. And then, and then crickets.
Yeah.
You're
totally.
You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I really like that song. Yeah. Shit.
No one else did.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Now we're going to play one of the songs, you know. So we'll have some of that, I'm sure. But we're you know, we got a lot of songs. So we're doing mostly stuff from mine and John's era, you know, the stuff off of Blood Sugar and Californication, by the way, a lot of stuff from Stadium. Yeah. And then new stuff. So that's where it's at right now, but we'll start to hone it and figure out what works. And as you know, that kind of takes a little time to figure it out. But right now we're just trying to play and get the muscle working again, but it's going good.
Last two questions for you. There's a famous kind of a home video that came out in 91 of you guys when you were recording Blood Sugar Sex Magic in the haunted mansion.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any haunted experiences in the haunted mansion?
I didn't personally. The other guys did, but Chris, I didn't stay in the house. Those guys stayed at the house. I had just met my first wife, Maria. I wanted to spend time with her. No offense to the other guys. I was spending plenty of time with them, but I was going back and forth, and I kind of like to clear my head, you know.
Get away, yeah.
Get away, yeah. It was helpful for me anyway. But we had a security guy staying there, keep an eye on the equipment, and there was an old piano upstairs. He thought he heard, you know, the piano going. I think he just smoking way too
yeah,
much.
Exactly.
And we're like, okay, yeah, whatever. And then he said he heard, oh, no, he saw a woman in the front yard with a long white dress like from the 20s or 30s, and she was walking around, and he quit. He's like, I'm out.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm out. You know, maybe the other guys did. I'm trying to think if they did. There was one room that was really cold for no reason, and somebody said that they felt like somebody had been murdered in that, you know. I don't know.
There's a place in Milwaukee called The Rave. It's a famous kind of venue.
Yeah.
And everyone says it's haunted. So like, it's haunted. Do you want to go in the basement? I'm like, okay. And it's this tiny little basement with this kind of old school boiler and radiator. And it's like, it's fucking creepy. And I'm like, whether it's haunted or not, this is creepy. This is fucked up. I don't want to be in this place anymore. That's probably why people think it's haunted.
Yeah.
You have a couple drinks, have a gummy, go down to the basement. It's haunted. All right.
Yeah. There was a lot of people thought it was Houdini's mansion, but it wasn't. Houdini's was across the street. So it's up Laurel Canyon, and in the basement of the house we were in, there was a big blocked off. So at some point there was a tunnel that went underneath the road, probably to Houdini's house. That was the house across the street. So, and there were some weird things. Who fucking knows?
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Again, I don't want to fucking hang out down here. This yeah, exactly. is fucking weird and dank and moldy. And
yeah, spiders in here.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, no, it sucks. I'm not doing that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, lots of bands. But we were the first band to be in that house with Rick, and he bought it. And then lots of people recorded. And then we went back and recorded a stadium there. We did all the basic tracks for that record there. But he did Love and Rockets and Mars Volta. I think Manson did a record
yeah.
there.
So Slipknot did, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great place. Yeah.
Well, last question for you, Chad.
Yes,
what's your favorite song on Unlimited Love, and what's your favorite song to play live? Is there one that stands out for you?
Ooh. Right now, probably only because I get to do my Keith Moon impersonation, it's probably a song called These Are the Ways.
Coming out April 1st, yeah.
Coming out April 1st, lots of notes. It's rocking. It's pretty great. Live? Shit. Maybe Give It Away because it's the last song.
Spoken like a true vet.
You know, people, they sort of like that, and it's like the horse sees the fucking barn, and there it is. I'm almost home. I mean, you know, that probably changes, and then, you know, playing new songs live is always fun, too, because they're new ones, but what's your favorite live song to play?
I think probably we have a song called Judas. Yeah. That's kind of our big yeah. hit single.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's, like you said, like Give It Away. Everyone knows the words. Everyone's singing. And yeah. no matter how many times you play it, Sting had a great point. Actually, Stuart Copeland did. That the song ceases being yours and becomes theirs. It's their night, their moment. So Judas is the one.
Yeah, it's a great
because
song.
Everyone's waiting for it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. We just went gold. We got a gold record for that, Chad.
Amazing.
Our first. I have one. You have hundreds.
No.
Well, you got 100 books behind you.
Right. Well, I'm trying to hide the whatever those MTV things are. My wife put those up, and so I can't do that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we'll blame it on the wife, right?
Exactly. Yeah, blame it on the wife. Look at my stuff. I'm so great and old.
Dude, so great to see you, man. I can't wait to see you this summer.
Dude.
I'm going to come see you at one of the stadium shows.
Of course. You just let me know.
Bum a cigarette from you again.
Come on back. Always. Of course, Chris. You're good? Your good family's good? Everybody's good?
Everyone's good, man. Yeah, we made it through everything. And my son's about ready to graduate from high school. You know how that goes.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Life moves forward, man.
Wow.
But it's cool.
Unbelievable. How does that happen?
I know. It's funny because when I came and saw you the first time, we were in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And then the second time was in Tampa, and I brought my son. And you're like, you want a cigarette? And I'm like, not when my son's here.
I don't smoke. What do you mean?
What are you talking about, Chad? I've never smoked a cigarette in my life.
That's so bad for you. Right, son?
Oh, man. All right, my friend.
Dude. All right, my brother.
Great talking to you.
You too. We'll catch up.
Absolutely.
Your city photographer!
Thanks, Chad.